Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Wave Break Podcast. I'm your host, Dylan Kelly, the founder of Wave Break. At Wave Break, we help Shopify stores maximize their email marketing revenue with done-for-you email marketing. And if you're like any other Shopify store that I talk to, you know that your email marketing could be improved. You know the power of email marketing. You want more repeat purchases. You want higher email revenue. And you're ready to take things to the next level in 2019. And if you're like a lot of the people I know and talk to in e-commerce who run a store of some success, a lot of your sales probably come from paid advertising. And you know that you should diversify your marketing, but your email marketing right now just isn't cutting it. And I get it. Email marketing is a time-consuming, never-ending workload. You have to come up with a strategy, segment your email list, set up the automation, send regular email campaigns, test everything, create content, blah, 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 blah. I'm already out of breath just talking about it. And if you do all of that busy work yourself, you're going to drain your time and energy, not to mention all of the other things that you're already so busy with in your business. Now, here's the thing. Email marketing is an extremely powerful and profitable revenue driver, but it's hard. That's why I created Wavebreak. At Wavebreak, we completely take email off your hands and turn it into a top revenue driver for your brand. So you won't have to worry about anything to do with email. Strategy, design, copywriting, coding, testing, it's all included. You'll get weekly updates, and every month we'll hop on a call to discuss results and future plans. And you'll have that peace of mind, and you won't have to worry about email marketing ever again. You'll just hop on a call every month and see how much money you made from it. You won't feel like you're leaving money on the table anymore. If you want to learn more about that and you want to apply to work with me at Wavebreak, all you have to do is to click the link down in the show notes below, or you can head over to wavebreak.co if you prefer to type it in your browser yourself. Now, without further ado, it's time to get into today's episode. And today I'm really excited to get into this episode because we're doing something different. Yes, we're doing something different. We are going to flash back. We had a fantastic first year of the podcast. And first things first, I just want to say thank you so much for being a supporter of the podcast. It has been a crazy year. 2018 was just, it was crazy. And the podcast, I think I said this before on the show, I forget. Like, my head is just like, I'm recording this at the end of the day on a Friday. So my head is just completely fried from a hard, solid week of work, just getting results for clients and doing a bunch of powerful moves in my own business. But besides that, this podcast has been, it's been a lot of work. And running it for the last year, I have learned a lot. I've met so many amazing people. So many listeners have reached out and let me know that it has just been, they just said a lot. You guys have said a lot of really nice things about the show. And I just want to say thank you so much for listening, because without you, without your support, without, like, if no one was listening to this podcast, well, first things first, it'd be very discouraging. but seriously, like, I would not have the motivation to keep doing it. So I just want to say thank you so much for listening. I try really hard every single week to bring you amazing content. I am so pumped for 2019 because I have some big, big, exciting things in the pipeline. I can't reveal anything yet. But long story short, some really big changes are happening, and I'm really excited to get them launched for you guys to experience, as well as I've got interviews booked for the next few months, and it's just going to be, there's some really awesome people that I'm going to be talking to who run some really cool companies, and they're going to be peeling back the curtain and revealing everything. So I'm super duper excited to dive into that in the new year. But before we get into that, and I talked about this, I know I talked about this on a past episode, but I want to look back and have a little bit of gratitude. And to do that, we're going to do a never done before in this podcast, a flashback Friday. I don't know, it's, this episode comes out on a Monday, but it's Friday when I'm recording this. So we're going to go back, and we're going to go back to one of the most popular episodes on this show. You guys loved it. It was an episode I released over the summer. I remember where I was recording it, or excuse me, I remember when I was recording it. I just remember it. And it was just a really fun episode to do. And the episode was with my friend, Pat Walls, founder of Starter Story. And if you haven't heard of Starter Story, it's this really awesome website, starterstory.com. You just go there. And basically what happens is people release exactly how much revenue they're doing from their e-commerce stores. They just literally put it all out there for you to see. 37,000 a month, 1,000 a month stores, people doing $500,000 a month. It's pretty crazy. And they just release everything. And so since this episode aired, like Pat has done a ton more interviews, and it's just like it's an awesome resource. So definitely go check it out. And if you don't have time to read through all of the interviews, do not worry, because guess what? Today we have the man himself who did the interviews, Pat Walls, and what he's going to be doing is he is going to be diving into every episode, diving into it, and he's going to be revealing the secrets that, or excuse me, not every episode, diving into every interview that he did from, like, at the time it was over 80 e-commerce brands. I don't even know what the number is now, but basically, he's seen a lot. And these aren't just e-commerce brands that, you know, somebody started yesterday. A lot of these brands are very successful. Like I said, some of them are selling hundreds of thousands of dollars every single month. And he has been able to notice patterns, things that he sees across the most successful online stores. And what's really cool is that, and especially about e-commerce, is that it's not some rocket science. That is some mystery. Ultimately, many of the top e-commerce brands are very, very similar when you break it down. So he's going to be revealing in this episode the top three marketing channels that every single store needs to get right to scale, and the craziest thing he's learned after interviewing over 80 e-commerce entrepreneurs. Like I said, that number is so much higher now. Got to get him back on the show eventually. But for now, I have this episode. We're going to get right into it. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Pat.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I'm excited to chat today. Let's just start with the basics. Like, who are you and what's Starter Story?
Cool. Yeah. So my name's Pat, and I created Starter Story a little less than 1 year ago. And Starter Story is a website where you can go online and look at the success stories of e-commerce businesses. So basically what I do is I find successful e-commerce businesses and I interview them and ask them how they got started, how they came up with the idea, questions about the design and manufacturing process, how they've acquired customers, plans for the future, and most importantly, for every single interview we do, we disclose monthly revenue. So if you go to the website, you'll be able to see basically a list of every store and the monthly revenue they have.
Nice. And yeah, there's so many good interviews and so much good content on Starter Story. I'm going to link it up in the show notes. If you guys haven't seen it yet, definitely go check it out. It's an awesome resource. If you're wondering what some stores are doing, like, it has everything from small stores to big stores doing like $1 million a month and beyond. Just really cool. It gives you some insight into their business and what those people are doing. And speaking of that, so as the founder of Starter Story, Pat, you've interviewed dozens of these businesses. Question for you, what are the patterns that you see? What do the most successful stores do that we can learn from?
Yeah, totally. So I would say that one of the biggest thing that stand out for me when I look at e-commerce businesses, and I've seen, you know, some of the interviews we've done have been amazing from this perspective, and some, I think, maybe more of the drop shipping stores, I think, could, you know, use some improvement in this area, and is the idea of focusing on your brand. A lot of times I'll see businesses that, I don't know how to phrase it, but building the brand over time is something that really sticks out to me. So, for example, one of my favorite examples is this company called Feet Socks, and they're actually one of the first interviews we did, and they have been around since Taylor, who was the founder, who graduated from college, and he is a brand expert, as based on after talking to him and doing a lot of research on him and seeing what he did, and he's done some really cool stuff. So basically, they're a sock e-commerce company. They sell just like socks with like fun designs and stuff like that. And one of the most notable things about them was just their social media presence that they had on Instagram. They had a big focus on Instagram, Snapchat, and they also had some really cool brand partnerships that they did. For example, they made this deal before the Olympics with Ali Reisman, who is an Olympic gymnast. And they also did some partnerships with Logan Paul. And through those partnerships, they have like custom socks that are designed by these athletes or influencers or whatever. And through those marketing channels, they would post on their Instagram. And through that, they would build their brand. And now I think they have something like over 100,000, maybe over 120,000 followers on Instagram. And that was something that really stuck out to me. So, you know, a lot of the dropshippers that I see and stuff like that, there's really no brand. It's like just finding some sort of product that you can, you know, scrape margins and try to make a buck off of it. But what the brand, in my opinion, what the brand gives you as an e-commerce company or as a brand is the ability to raise your prices. So because you have a brand, because you have that brand power, you can sell your product for a way higher markup than someone who's selling the same exact product, but without this kind of brand power. I don't know if that makes sense, but...
No, totally. Yeah. And you think about socks, like it doesn't get more basic than socks.
Yeah.
Like everybody wears socks.
Exactly.
And to be able to charge a premium price for socks, you can't just be drop shipping them for China. Like they charge, what is it? $36 for three pairs of socks.
Yep.
So $12 per pair of socks. You can't just do that as bestsockstore.com. Like,
yeah,
people need to buy into something bigger than that. So that's so cool.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Branding is huge. And I think that's a real reason why so many businesses like grow so big. Like I think a great example is Movement Watches.
Yeah.
Like there's so many different watch companies you can buy from. There's so many different clones of Movement, and their watches, like, they don't cost that much to make, but they sell for a lot of money, and they can do that because they've created this awesome brand behind it. A lot to learn from that, from them and Feet. That's awesome. That's cool. What else have you seen successful stores do?
Yeah, so another thing that obviously it goes back with the brand thing is to build and manufacture your own products. Again, I don't think that the dropshipper model is a long-term strategy. From what I've seen and the companies that I've interviewed, they're building and manufacturing their own products. For example, this company, Joker Greeting, who makes like a prank greeting cards that like you can't turn off, and a few other companies, is even though some people think, okay, well, I'll drop ship or buy the products in bulk now and sell them, and then later I can manufacture the products. But even if you manufacture the products on a small scale to begin, you can again build your brand, keep your costs low. You'll probably see a lot more success. Another example is this this girl, Ashley, who started this company, Abs Protein Pancakes. And it's like a healthy pancake mix for people that are like into fitness and stuff like that. She started manufacturing the product in her kitchen and, you know, making small batches and selling to friends, and then, you know, getting on Facebook and eventually getting online. She was eventually actually on Shark Tank too, which is pretty cool. But she just manufactured the product in her home. So that probably saved her just so much money, rather than going out and buying something at a high cost and just barely scraping away.
Yeah, and that's huge too. Like going back to the brand thing, if anybody can just buy a product from a manufacturer in China and there's nothing unique about it, like you can't grow that into an 8-figure business just because it's a commodity. But that's cool, yeah. And I actually had Travis Peterson from Joker Greeting on the podcast. If you guys want to go listen to that, Travis and I talked about how he gets a 9x ROI on his Facebook ads using videos, and that is episode 22. Huh. So you can check that out. I'll link that up in the show notes below. But that's something cool about me and Pat is like we've actually interviewed some of the same people, and so we have a lot of mutual friends through this,
yeah,
which is fun. Speaking of mutual friends, this kind of is a transition to the third thing that a lot of successful stores do, which is
cater to a niche audience.
Boom.
Yep. This is another one that, based on the companies that I've seen, this is like huge. And Wad Welder, I think, is one you're alluding to.
Yeah.
They make like a hand cream and moisturizer and things like that for CrossFitters. Just like when I found them and interviewed them, I just thought it was like an amazing, I think he was, when I did the interview, he's making $35,000 a month in revenue on this hand cream for CrossFitters. And like, and I can go a few more niche audiences that I love is, I interviewed this guy who, he started an air traffic controller memes business where he used to be an air traffic controller, and he started this memes Facebook page that eventually grew into a website. And then now he makes $35,000 a month selling like just random merchandise and other things that have like air traffic controller jokes on it, like leggings with the air traffic maps on them, and just like watches that have like air traffic controller, and shirts that have like memes on top of them. Another interesting one that I saw was this company called Maze Engineers, and they make like the, you know, when you see like in a laboratory maze, like mice running around and looking for food, and they're running tests on them, like scientists or whatever, they make those mazes.
That's so funny. The flight control thing, man.
Yeah.
That's great. You can really make anything a business. I mean, like the flight control,
yeah.
Memes, that's great. The card company. And jumping back to Wadwelder, yeah, what's so cool about having such a like a niche audience is it's super powerful in your marketing. So when I had Keegan on my podcast, he was talking about how they use Instagram to find influencers and do things. But if they were just targeting everybody who gets a blister, they wouldn't be able to find influencers and generate sales from Instagram marketing. So it's super, super important to pick a niche and really own it before scaling up. But yeah, that's huge. That's huge. I love it. And so is there anything else that the most successful stores do that we can learn from?
Yeah. So I think I kind of touched on it last time, but having a unique product, I think, again, going off that against the dropshippers model, is if you can find the product on Amazon, it's probably not going to be, or it's going to be a lot harder to make it successful. And it's not like if you can find, like, for example, the Feet Socks guys, like you can obviously find socks on Amazon, but they're selling like very unique socks, like socks that have some meme on it or some cool new trend is going to be on their site.
Or an influencer, yeah. Or like exclusive sock that you can't find anywhere else because it has Logan Paul's face,
yeah,
on it.
Exactly. And another really cool one, unique one, is this guy sold miniature construction supplies, like literally mini cinder blocks that people like play with, like desk. This is such an awesome story. And like on your desk, like it's like kind of like funny gift you can give someone is like little cinder blocks, and you can, it's like Legos for adults.
Oh my goodness. I'm looking at the website right now. They have miniature bricks, miniature cinder blocks, miniature wooden pallets.
Yeah,
man. I'm going to link this one up in the show notes, minimaterials.com. This is great. This looks so much fun. I don't even know what it is about it. Like, I don't know why I want a pallet of mini red bricks,
yeah,
on my desk, but I do. And it's $20. Man, we're about to get a sale right here.
That's what everyone said, man. In the comments of that interview, everyone's like, I don't know why I want this, but I really want this. It is just like, I think when things are tiny, you know, people love like tiny things.
Yeah.
Little trinkets, stuff like that. People love that stuff.
Dude, that's great. That's awesome. Anyway, I interrupted you. Go ahead. Keep going.
So I think the last thing I had that really stuck out to me is like products that get PR. So again, that kind of goes back to the unique products. Products that are viral in nature. I think that the one that we talked about earlier with Travis from Joker Greeting, obviously, like, that's just such a ridiculous concept to send someone like a card that never turns off for 24 hours, even if you like dunk it in the water or like put a sledgehammer to it. Or another one is this company called Beardo that I interviewed, and they sell ski masks that look like a beard. So, like, you know, when it's really cold out skiing, you wear like a mask over your face.
Right.
They basically have like, it's the same as mask, but it looks like you're wearing a huge beard. So he got like a bunch of PR off that. And like with the PR, I also see like Kickstarters do really well. They launch a Kickstarter, a bunch of PR comes with the Kickstarter, and then their brand just kind of blows up.
That's cool. Yeah. And it seems like there's a common thread here. Like these stores aren't easily replaceable. Like, there's all things about them that make them unique and make them not easy to just like duplicate. Like Feet Socks has this brand that can't really be replicated, and Joker Greeting has a product that they make themselves, and it went viral. And it's like the first person to go viral gets it, not the next person. And mini materials. I only know one mini material company now.
Yeah.
I don't think it's super saturated space, but that's so unique.
I'm sure there's been others.
It's so unique, but that's great, man. I love that. Thanks for sharing those things. Speaking of all these companies, so we've kind of talked about like what separates them, what's made them successful, and what's made them unique. Like diving a little deeper, like have you seen any common marketing channels when it comes to like how these people are acquiring customers or retaining customers?
Yeah, totally. So, you know, I think one of the big reasons that I started Starter Story is in previous startup ventures for me, I think the hardest thing is finding customers. Like once you actually have a product,
right,
and you get your product out there, that seems like it's going to be, you know, you build it, they will come. But as you probably know, and all the people you interviewed, that's never the case. Like that is something that I really wanted to understand how people do that.
Yeah. I know, like that's definitely the hardest part. Like it's so easy to get wrapped up in like, I was just talking with a friend the other day and it's like, hey, I have this idea, blah, blah, blah. And then you get wrapped up in the logo and the website. But it's like, if you don't have any customers, if nobody hears about you, if you don't, you never launch the website, no one's ever going to buy. That's why marketing is so important. And really all these stores that we already talked about so far, the one thing that they have that's made them successful besides their uniqueness, or their branding is their marketing, and that's the way they get their customers, because without their customers there's no business. So speaking of that, like what are the most common marketing channels that you've seen these stores use as you've been learning, as you've been interviewing these over 80 people now?
Yeah, so obviously I think everyone knows that the number one marketing channel is Facebook ads. I think that anyone can agree that that's really where it's at, and I think that's there for a reason. I personally have never ran Facebook ads for any of my personal businesses, but I have seen that to be the most common and probably the most effective way to get your product out there.
Yeah, same here. The great majority of the people I work with have scaled their business to 7 figures in revenue just off Facebook ad alone, which it's a super powerful channel.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I think there's a lot of really cool stuff going on in some of the interviews I've done with experimenting with Facebook ads, as well as experimenting with retargeting. And I think also Instagram and Snapchat, and I think Pinterest is a somewhat big channel too, are all just like, it's pretty interesting what you can do with Facebook ads. And also to tag on to that, there's a really cool concept of, first of all, experimenting with your Facebook ads and getting people to your website, and then collecting their emails, and then eventually getting them to convert that way.
Yeah, totally. Like there's two things you said that I really like. Like number one, retargeting. One of my clients told me the other day, she's been scaling her store super duper fast. And I was just kind of like, I was asking her questions about Facebook ads because I was just curious, because I know she's killing it with them. And one thing she said that I really liked was like, if you're not running retargeting ads, you're throwing money away. You're paying to get people to your website. And then if you don't retarget them, they're not going to ever find you again. They're just going to disappear. And it's the same with like you were talking about the email side. Like if you don't have lead capture set up to capture people who are leaving your website, you don't have a way to get them on your email list. You just spent, you know, X dollars or whatever to get that person to your website, and then they're gone forever, and you just wasted that money that could have turned into a sale, you know, a week down the road, or maybe your Black Friday sales, what pushes them over the edge. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so true. Like I heard this one story from a podcast one time about like, yeah, you just at least put the pixel on your website so that you can retarget maybe when you have the budget that you want to do it in or whatever. Like if you have, especially if you are about to launch and you expect there's some sort of PR event that's going to happen, say you have a big Kickstarter or a big article goes out, at least get the pixel on your page, because you can, you know, you can advertise to customers that are going to convert higher.
Yeah.
Pretty much guaranteed.
You don't want to miss out on that. The most expensive customer to buy is the cold traffic.
Exactly.
And then the warmer it gets, the cheaper it is to acquire the customer. And you don't want to let that get away. You don't want to waste money on just the cold traffic and not have systems in place to capture more of your traffic. And I think that's why like a lot of bigger stores kind of understand that. And that's kind of why they head towards conversion rate optimization, like that route. But it's like before you even get there, you can set up ways to like easy low-hanging fruit. Like for example, jumping into the next kind of like topic of marketing channels is like email, just exit intent pop-up. When people are leaving your site, you set up this pop-up. This is one of the things, like one of the first things I do when I start working with clients. And even if you can just rescue 10% of the people who are leaving your website, depending on the size of your store, like that could be an extra $10,000 per month to your revenue or more, which is just huge. And it's with traffic that you already have. You don't even have to increase your ad spend or do anything different. You just have to get the right lead capture system in place and the right follow-up sequence on the back end through email. And you're golden. That's it.
Yeah. Man, email marketing is one of those things that I think after the Facebook and Instagram, there's all this hype around social media. And, you know, you have this Twitter and it's going to bring in so many. I think in the last few years, everyone has been so hyped about social media. And now we're starting to realize that unless you pay for it, it's really not the best marketing channel. And people kind of forgot about email. And everything that I hear now is like email is this kind of, it's almost like a gold mine that people don't realize and a lot of people don't take advantage of.
Yeah, totally. And I can speak to this for listeners who don't know, even though I plug it every show. I run a done-for-you email marketing service for Shopify stores. And the biggest thing I see is that people, well, number one, it takes time. It's not this big, confusing beast. It can be. And a lot of people, I see this a lot in communities across Facebook and different e-commerce communities, but a lot of people think email is like this old, outdated thing. But really, it's still, if you look at the data from last year's Black Friday, like the top three marketing channels, email's like, I forget what it was, like it's top three. It's number two or something insane. And there's so much, it's easy to get caught up in like, ooh, SMS is the new thing. Or Facebook Messenger is the new thing. And like, it might be the future. I'm not saying that it's not. I'm not saying don't do SMS and don't do email, but these are all three.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of like comparing apples to oranges. Like, they're all customer relationship management tools that you can use to communicate to your past customers. It doesn't mean you don't have a messenger. It doesn't mean you don't use SMS. It doesn't mean you don't use email. But right now, like, as far as I know, email is generating the biggest ROI compared to all those other channels. Like people say Messenger has better engagement, but the thing is email is just still so powerful. Like you can, if you're not doing any email, you can add 15 to 20%, grow your business by 15 to 20% in like 3 months by just adding it. And it's been around for 2 decades. Like what marketing channel has survived that long? Insane. Anyway, I could talk about email forever. I love email.
Yeah. I think one of the beauty of email is that you just have control over it. You know, when Facebook changes their algorithm or Instagram changes their algorithm and now your posts are only seen by like 10% of your following, or, you know, Messenger, they make some API change to Messenger where you can't reach out to people anymore. Email, you will always have email and nothing is ever going to change. So you just have a lot of control and long-term play on it.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. You own your email list. It's an asset.
Yep.
And speaking of, this is kind of going a little off topic, but the reason why I started doing what I do is because I was working with a client, a really successful store with a six-figure ad spend. They were getting a positive ROI every single month on their Facebook ads. They were just killing it, doing really awesome. Their business was growing every single year like crazy. And my job, what I did at the time was I did conversion rate optimization for Shopify stores. So my job was to take their Facebook ads traffic and help them make more money from it by optimizing their landing pages. And something really bad happened, which was all of their Facebook ads traffic dried up overnight. It was really terrible. They went from spending six figures on ads and like their daily sales looked like they had just started their store the other day, because big brands entered the space and people are starting to see this now. Like ads are starting to get more expensive every year. Facebook ads, they're not getting cheaper. They're getting more expensive. And having an email list to rely on when things are going bad is just huge. And that's exactly why I pivoted into what I do now, is because you don't want to be too reliant on Facebook ads, because especially you think about all the changes going on at Facebook right now. It's just, you want to diversify your eggs and make sure they're not in one basket. And speaking of all our eggs not being in one basket, like what are some of the other common marketing channels that you've seen the most successful stores using?
Yeah, so the next one that I've not actually seen as many stores using, because it seems like this wild, wild west. It's like, even for someone like me, I'm a software engineer, I should know how this works, but it's just it's kind of this crazy land of SEO and blogging. I think that a lot of the stores that I talk to, they want to get into SEO and they want to get into blogging. And they have, you know, actively worked towards it, but it's one of the hidden gems, and especially of like long-term asset to have, is to have search engine optimization for your products and for your store. I would say that this is something that for any store that wants to get into this is to get into it sooner than later. I think that, you know, it's something that takes a long time to build, but just writing content about your product. So whatever type of problem that you solve, there's just tons of things you can write about. So if you are, for example, Wad Welder, the guy that makes the CrossFit hand cream, I'm not sure if he actually does any SEO or blogging, but if you were to write just tons of CrossFit articles, and there's probably just, you know, there's so many little things about CrossFit that people will read, especially because they have that niche audience. A, you can build your following by having a blog, and blogs can equal email lists that convert, just like your website can convert. You can also have, you know, and that actually reminds me, which I'll get to the story of a really successful store that does SEO. So you can, your blog can turn into a content machine that A, brings people in from all sorts of places like Facebook and Instagram, and they get shared on social. That can convert into emails, which you can sell your product into emails, and your blog can be connected to your store. So you could have your, you know, website.com/blog that has all that. And then when you start building, and you want to start small with something like that, like say you're doing CrossFit, is like how to, like, you know, something about CrossFit, something very specific that, you know, maybe like it would be hard to rank for, like, how to start CrossFit is not probably an article that you want to write. But if you write about something very specific about maybe one exercise in CrossFit for your blog, that might actually gain some traction with which coming up in Google. So if you're bringing in people through Google and through social media and all that, it's kind of like a flywheel turning machine that just like Facebook ads kind of can continue bringing people back to your website.
Right. Yeah. SEO is huge because it takes a while to get up there, but once you get up there, you're up there for a while.
Yep.
And it takes a lot to get knocked off. You said you were going to mention an example.
Yeah.
What's the story?
Yeah. Another one is, or the one that comes to mind now that I was just thinking about it, is this company called All Things Commerce. That's like their parent company, but they make, they're like a Swedish brand that makes Moomin products. Moomin is like this cartoon from Sweden. I wasn't familiar with it before I interviewed them, but it's like this very famous cartoon. I don't know, maybe think of like the SpongeBob of Sweden or something like that. And they create a ton of content around this like beloved cartoon character. And the product that they sell are like Moomin branded products. So they create all this content and tons of people search the web for that and are just like, this brand has like a cult following. And that's one that I remember having, like, they have a lot, they have, their blog is almost like a separate business from their store. And I guess, oh, the other one that we mentioned before is ATC memes, the air traffic controller memes. They're not only making memes and all that, but they have like a blog, like a website, which is, you know, anyone that's searching that type of content on Google is going to find their website and eventually may buy something from their store.
Right. Yeah. And I interviewed a brand on my podcast called 100% Pure, and they're an 8-figure e-commerce brand heading towards 9 figures. And their strategy for the future is investing. I asked him, I was like, where are you heading in the future? Like, where's the future? Like, this guy has built his business through the recession, still growing. It grew through the recession. And like, this guy, he's on point. He knows his marketing. He said, the number one thing I'm investing in is content. Like, we think the world is shifting to content, whether it's video, whether it's blogs, people are still searching. If you can get ranking up there, you're golden. Because like I kind of said earlier, like once you're up there, you're up there. Like if you Google how to do anything, it's like the WikiHow site. It's been up there for like, I don't know, 20 years probably. But it's like always up there. But yeah, those are some great examples. And so we kind of have the top 3 marketing channels from all those like 80 stores you've interviewed. And it looks like they're Facebook ads at the top. Email seems to be like number 2. And then SEO or content marketing coming in 3rd. So as we wrap up here, I wanted to ask you a little bit more specific question. So like after interviewing so many e-commerce entrepreneurs and business owners, what is the craziest thing you've learned?
So craziest thing I've learned is, so is that a question of like something that really like stood out to me or just a crazy story or?
That's a good question. It could be either. Like we've discovered the mini materials and I'm still on their website looking at bricks and blocks, which is pretty crazy business. But you can go either route if you want to talk about something crazy that like surprised you in like that's unusual way or just crazy as in like, I don't know. Okay. Go where, sure, do whatever you want.
All right, cool. Yeah, some things that stuck out to me. So going back to the feet socks example, I really like that one. So taking a little bit of a digression, but there's this influencer named Logan Paul. I'm sure, you know, he's kind of got kind of a tarnished name now after doing some like bad stuff in the media is whipping on him. But before all this, these Feet Socks guys, they were so adamant on building their brand and doing it through YouTube and social media and making like a partnership with someone famous, because when you get someone famous alongside your brand, it can, for them at least, it really blew them up. So a really cool story was like, these guys were living, they graduated UMass in Massachusetts, and they were just like, all right, we want to take our brand to the next level. Like, we're selling socks online, but this isn't enough. We need to like just take like some we need to do something crazy. So they moved to 1600 Vine Street in Los Angeles, which is the famous building that's known for all the Vine stars. So I don't even remember Vine, but Vine was like this app that eventually got shut down, where it's like 5-second videos, and all these people got famous off of it, like Logan Paul and all these people that are, a lot of them are now YouTubers and doing their own thing, but they all lived in this apartment complex on the street, Vine Street in Los Angeles, and they all lived there, and they were just like, for some reason, they all lived there and like partnered with each other. So these guys from Feet Socks were like, all right, we want to get on board with these guys. Like, these guys are like the biggest things on the internet right now. And not as many people realize that as looking back they do now. So they moved into they got an apartment in 1600 Vine Street for like $3,000 to $4,000 a month, this crazy like high rise LA apartment. And they just kind of like stalked Logan Paul until they got a meeting with him. And then when they got a meeting with him, eventually they made one video for them saying, like, if I can sell 500, like they made some partnership behind the scenes of, can I sell 500,000 socks? I don't think I can sell 500,000 socks. And they made this kind of challenge, and he has this following of like, I don't know, probably like 10 million YouTube subscribers. So they made this deal with him, and he made one video, and this one video sold them like $500,000 worth of socks off of one video. And that just like how they linked up with them is pretty crazy. Yeah.
Man. Okay. First of all, their strategy, like, hey, let's move. That's a huge bet, but man, I paid off. That's insane. Off one video. That's crazy. That is a crazy story, man. Wow. That's awesome. That's so cool.
Yeah, so that's a great interview. You can check out that interview on my website. It's one of the first ones if you scroll all the way to the bottom.
For sure. Feet Socks. I'm gonna add that to the show notes right now. That's awesome. Well, hey, as we wrap up here, where can we go to learn more about you and Starter Story?
Yeah, so you can go check out the website, starterstory.com. And I'm also on Twitter, at @thePatWalls, @thePatWalls. And I tweet about Starter Story and all this stuff like behind the scenes, if you're interested in learning about that at all. Yeah.
Awesome. And I'll be sure to link that all up in the show notes below. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Pat. A lot of value here. I think it's really cool to see not only like what one specific store is doing, but I think a lot of value comes from seeing what a lot of people are doing. So many good nuggets and insights from this episode. I really appreciate you coming on. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Now, listener, before I sign off, stop me if this sounds familiar. Your email marketing is stuck. You feel like you could be doing email better. You're not generating enough email revenue, and you feel like you're leaving money on the table. But you don't have the time to figure email out yourself or do it on your own because you have a business to run. Imagine this. Imagine not having to worry about leaving money on the table with your email marketing. Imagine not having to figure out what to send, when to send it, how many emails should look, what automation you need, what segments you need, how often you should be contacting your email list, or just worrying about sending the next email. You don't have to worry about any of that. Imagine having peace of mind knowing that your email marketing is generating sales in good hands. At Wavebreak, we help Shopify stores maximize their email marketing revenue. That's it. We don't do anything else. And we've created a system called the Wavebreak Method that, number one, makes you less dependent on Facebook or other marketing channels. Let's say something bad happens. Facebook says, see you later, Shopify store, and they just completely kill your ad traffic overnight. You don't have to worry. You don't have to stress because you're good to go because you have a cushion of email revenue. You don't have to worry about what your wife is going to do or if you're going to be able to make rent or if you're going to be able to pay people because you have this cushion of email revenue to rely on. Number two, the second thing this does is huge. And it's how stores scale from 7 figures to 8 figures to 9 figures. And the secret is repeat purchases. The Wavebreak method gets rid of one-time buyers and increases repeat orders. Number three, it keeps your email list engaged. You don't have to worry about Black Friday and beyond. We'll figure out the ideal amount of times that your list needs to be contacted to maximize revenue, and then we'll execute it for you. If you want to learn more about this system and how we can work together to apply it to your business, go to wavebreak.co to schedule a call with me. And I'll personally send you my calendar link and we can chat one-on-one. Now, I don't have unlimited time to do these calls. I can only do a couple of them per week. So if you want to get your call, go sign up at wavebreak.co for it as soon as possible and we can talk about how we can work together. Thanks for listening to this episode. Subscribe to the show on iTunes to get notified of new episodes as soon as they drop.